Welcome to On Trial, starring Mark Radulich, also starring Sean Comer. Hope you're ready, Hollywood, because you're on trial.
All rise. Court is now in session. This is On Trial, brought to you by the Radulich and Broadcasting Network series of podcasts. Well, now when I can't think of what it is I want to say, people will see like the wheel spinning on my head.
It's all going on in there, trust me.
So this is it. This is On Trial. And over there, that's Jesse Starcher. And we're doing a video. How about that? This is the first, like the one I did with my son was the test run of this whole jazz. But this is like the first official Radulich and Broadcasting Network podcast. And we're kicking it off with On Trial. And Sean is not here tonight. Stepping in is the aforementioned Jesse Starcher. How you doing, Jesse?
Doing very well, Mark Radulich. Thank you very much for having me. I think this may be my first time on trial. I can't remember. Do you recall ever me showing up on this podcast before?
No. I think Andrew showed up once, and it was actually me, Sean, and Andrew. I think one of us just like played judge. I think Andrew needed to prosecute one of the war movies. It's the On Trials tend to just be me and Sean. That was the way it was structured, kind of as he calls it, like the Lincoln Douglas debate of movies.
I've been on the show for multiple times. You heard me in the intro, Mark.
Well done, Jesse. You got me.
I'll tell you right now, if this was an On Trial that was planned with anybody else, I would have summarily either pushed them out of the way or weaseled my way into this podcast, because you and I, we have an axe to grind, a hatchet to bury, something along those lines.
Yeah. Okay. So before I start playing video and stuff, this is just kind of a brief introduction as to why we're doing this tonight. Like why back to the, because normally the On Trials are related to whatever the big movie we're reviewing on Damn You Hollywood is, or there's some sort of theme going on. Occasionally we kind of do something out of left field. So this one, I aired within this past couple of days, A Long Road to Ruin that Robert Winfrey and I did for the Back to the Future trilogy. And that was, 2014?
Yes, it was.
That was an early one, right? Yeah. That was during one of Sean's hiatuses. Like for the entire length and run of the original version of that show, one of us was always taking off at some point, and Robert was always stepping in for one of us.
Yeah.
So Robert and I did Back to the Future while Sean was gone for a day. And you were listening. This is the Blog Talk Radio days. And you were listening, and you were sending in messages. Like there was a chat and everything. And you were like, oh, this, that, and the other thing. We get through the first one. You're like, okay, cool. I'm with it. You guys are making good arguments. The second one, I went into a whole thing about why the movie is crap, and you like had a meltdown.
Yeah, I never wanted to throw my phone as much as I did, and type angrily at the same time. So it was kind of tough to do that. But yeah, man, you were really, let's just say you weren't my favorite person that night, because
that night you were not a super fan so much as you were just listening.
That's correct. It made me debate as to whether I wanted to become involved with the Radulich and Broadcasting Network. And then I realized you were a Clutch fan, and I was like, okay, I'll forgive it.
Can I just take a pause for a moment? I'm just now realizing the shirt you're wearing.
Oh, yeah.
Did you put that on specifically for this, you crazy camera guy, you?
This right here is a Kapow! The Pop Culture Podcast shirt. In their earlier days, I was a super fan of those guys. Of course, I know most of them around here from Marietta and surrounding area.
Real quick. This is still going to go up on the regular podcast. So, like, you know, we have to be aware that if we're like the thing on screen, like explain it for people who are just getting the audio.
Yeah. So what you're seeing here is this is a Dr. Pepper rendition of I'm a Pepper Too. So they called their fans Jessies just because, that I was probably one of the earlier fans of those guys and interacted with them a good bit. So they made a shirt.
This is Kapow! The Pop Culture Podcast, right?
That's right. They made a shirt called I'm a Jesse, and I was probably two in existence. I own one.
And you wore it for this.
And I wore
my WrestleMania shirt, which you can get at Target, by the way.
Very nice. Very
but
nice.
But I'm wearing clothing. That's the whole thing here.
That's good. That's this video podcast stuff. I don't know, man. We got to wear clothes. I have put on a hat to cover my bald head, glasses. Mm-hmm. I got to look professional. I didn't shave, so I apologize.
I got a shave and a haircut for two bits a couple of days ago, so I'm tight now. Nice. Yeah, in a month from now, ZZ Top. Anyway, so back to the thing. So yeah, go back to your point, if you're not done, but I also want you to talk about like just your history with this franchise. You're a big time travel guy, and yeah, this is kind of like the ultimate classic time travel movie. It's probably the most well known of the time travel action adventure comedy genre. It has a special place in your heart, so I can imagine me saying any. Whether or not I had valid points to make is sort of not the point. I said something bad about your favorite thing. So talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, it was 1980. It had to have been 86, 87.
It was not 1900.
Back in the day. And I was at a friend's house of my parents, and I sat down. I think they had HBO on, and Back to the Future 1 showed up on screen, and I was immediately taken by the movie, became a big fan of the franchise. Back to the Future 2 hit, and I remember the marketing clearly, just sitting in my dad's basement watching Saturday night TV, and the Pizza Hut commercial came on where I think you could get the crazy glasses for Back to the Future 2, you know. And I was all about it. I was extremely excited. So I can't remember if I went to the theater to watch this one, but I do know that I know I saw the third one in theaters. I can't remember if I saw the second one in theaters, but as soon as it hit VHS, I'm sure I rented a copy and did what I multiply did over and over the weekends, which is rent the movie, try and get a Back to the Future trilogy fest going when the third one came out, sit there, you know, watch all three movies over the weekend. But regardless, 2 stands as my favorite of the series, just because there was so much that they did with the concept of time travel and all these consequences that were laid out there. It tickled my brain. It made me go, oh man, this is awesome. So yeah, you know, I was a big fan of the second one. I consider it my favorite of the franchise, and to hear you talking about it, which, you know, you laid out all your points. I listened to the podcast recently, you know, and then I went out and punched a baby because you made me that mad. But I understand sort of where you're coming from. We'll get into those points later tonight. But it's funny that you picked on that one and not the third one, because that's where I usually hear all the criticism.
This is obvious, but I think it's so much better. Like, it's funny because my kids and I watched 1 and 2 today. This is an aside. Like, I have to watch 2, but I want to watch this with my kids, and I can't start with 2. They haven't seen the first one. We had to watch them both.
Yeah.
But we stopped at 2 because we had other things to do at that point. I had to go have a steak dinner for Father's Day.
It's tough to put all three movies in there and get them in one day and not feel like you're neglecting something.
Yeah, well, you know, 900 other podcasts and shit. Plus I had to go have a Father's Day steak dinner with my family.
Ah, yes. Oh, yes.
Since I'm working on Father's Day. In any case, we watched the first two movies, and my wife kind of just like shouts from the bedroom, like, hey, if you're going to watch the third one, let me know, because I want to watch that one too. And she like sat out of the first one, the first two that we watched. I love the third one. I think the third one's great.
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of the whole franchise, so I can't disagree with you. But yeah, there's more people that I talk to that are really, they call it the turd one, Mark. T-U-R-D.
The turd one?
The turd one.
And very droll. What'd you see the most common complaint about the third one is?
I see, the thing is, I can't figure out why people are complaining. Most people just complain to say that they don't like it. You know, it's not like I get into it with them as to why they don't. I assume it's just so different compared to the others, which it shouldn't be, since this is 2 and 3 are supposed to be all one movie. They did the third one with the second one obviously being filmed as well, but Maybe it's the dichotomy of the characters. You know, we're at a complete 180 for Doc Brown and Marty McFly, I think, in that, where it, well, definitely Doc Brown, who's not the scientist quack that we kind of see in the first two. And the third one just seems really different. And it's in the Old West. And man, I can remember growing up and not being a fan of Westerns.
Yeah. I was going to say, if I had to imagine and I haven't done like a deep dive into it. I mean, honestly, this is your passion project. I'm just here.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the Jesse Show. I'm a Jesse too. I would imagine just kind of thinking about things. One, because it's just such a genre shift from the action comedy science fiction of the first two to a Western, and almost like a straight up Western.
It really is.
It's a little sciencey. I mean, Doc Brown's like making an ice machine, and you know, he makes a new time machine out of a train and shit like that. But I mean, like, for the most part, it's gunfights, a train robbery. It's actually the best part of the movie for me. It's just like, are y'all robbing the train? No, we're scientists.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So back to their future too. Let's get into, and I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen here. As I'm reading some notes here, we're going to play a trailer with the sound off.
Okay.
No sound at all. All right. So Back to the Future 2, it's from 1989. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. It obviously stars Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd. They replaced Michael J. Fox's previous girlfriend, Jennifer, with Ally Sheedy. Leah Thompson.
Okay, you're reading this straight off of something. Ally Sheedy was in this?
Yeah, Ally Sheedy. Elizabeth Shue. I did that earlier.
Wow. Wait a second.
Yeah, wrong 80s actress. Elizabeth Shue. 2021
alternate timeline here. Okay.
And then Thomas F. Wilson returns as Biff. Did they get back? What's his face?
Who are we talking about?
Crispin Glover.
Glover did not come back.
Yeah, he did not. Yeah, they replaced him with Jeffrey Weissman. Mm-hmm. All right. So, development. Director Robert Zemeckis said that initially a sequel was not planned for the first film, but its huge box office success led to the conception of a second installment. He later agreed to do a sequel, but only if Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd returned. With Fox and Lloyd confirmed, Zemeckis met with screenwriting partner Bob Gale to create a story for the sequel. Zemeckis and Gale would later regret that they ended the first one with Jennifer in the car with Marty and Doc Brown because it required them to come up with a story that fit her in rather than a whole new adventure, which is the first problem I had with this movie.
Yeah.
I don't need to get into further development. That's kind of the big highlight there. So production. 2 years were needed to finish the building sets and writing the script before the shooting could begin. During filming, the creation of the appearance of the age characters was a well-guarded secret involving state-of-the-art makeup techniques, et cetera, et cetera. The film was considered one of the most groundbreaking projects for industrial light and magic. It was one of the effects house's first forays into digital compositing, as well as the VistaGlide motion control camera system, which enabled them to shoot one of its most complex sequences in which Fox played three separate characters, Marty Sr., Marty Jr., Marty and Marlene, all of whom interacted with each other.
And this Hercules.
My second problem with this movie, by the way. We talked about Crispin Glover being replaced, etc. And that's really it. There's more notes here, but I'm not going to read the entire Wikipedia page. That would be ridiculous. Now, go ahead and stop sharing the screen now. Go ahead and give the plot synopsis. It's usually my job, but you have a nicely. I miss your plot synopsis from when we do comics, by the way.
Well, hopefully, I covered everything here, and of course, I would have closed out the screen that has it on it. There we go. All right. So Marty and Doc pick up where the first film leaves off. Okay. Doc Brown tells Marty and Jennifer something bad is going to happen to their kids in the future. They need to get involved in order to prevent it. So traveling to 2015, Jennifer is knocked out as Doc needed to get her out of the picture. Marty is able to foil the plans of Biff's grandson, but also gets the brilliant idea to take a sports almanac to the past in order to win some money on future sporting events. So I talked about Biff's grandson. There was this big plot where he was going to get Marty Jr. Involved in some stuff. That is all averted. However, Marty gets the brilliant idea of taking the sports almanac back with him, and Doc talks him out of it. So overhearing this is one very old and decrepit 2015 Biff Tannen. All right, so keep that in mind. Now, Jennifer, who they knocked out and laid out in the back alley, smart idea. Jennifer is found, she's taken back, she's found by the police, taken back to her future self's house, and Marty and Doc come up with a plan to rescue her. Now, during that rescue, 2015 Biff has found the DeLorean, basically followed it, and then acquires the DeLorean and goes back to give the almanac to his younger self. So he's able to get a hold of the almanac, hops in the time machine, goes back to, that's right, the events of the first movie in 1955. He finds 1955 Biff, gives him the almanac, and says, here, this will solve all of your monetary issues for the rest of time. So old Biff returns to 2015, leaves the DeLorean where it was, and fades off into the night. Now, I put fades in quotes there because he does indeed fade. I think it's a deleted scene. You just see him in pain as he gets out of the DeLorean, but he fades off. Marty and Doc return with Jennifer, get in the DeLorean, travel back to 1985, but it is more, let's just say it's a very, very bad version of 1985 when they last left. Okay?
Yeah, it's like a post-apocalyptic version.
Yes. It is actually known as the Biff Horrific version of 1985.
It has a name?
It does. Biff Horrific, sir. Perfect. After reeling from the changes of 1985A, Doc and Marty discover the actions of 2015 Biff and make a beeline to 1955 to get the sports almanac back. In 1955, we follow Marty and Doc as they make their way through different events of the first movie, attempting to get the book back. As Marty is able to snatch the book from the windshield of 1955 Biff's car, Marty realizes he will need all the help he can get, as Biff fully intends on murdering this pesky thorn in his side once and for all by running him down inside a tunnel. Luckily, as Marty reaches the end, Doc drops down a length of rope from his hover converted DeLorean that Marty is able to latch onto and fly out of the way as Biff careens into the back of a truck carrying manure. Yet again, at the end of the movie, I hate manure. At the end of the movie, while Marty burns the almanac in an attempt to land in severe winds during the famous Hill Valley storm, Doc is struck by lightning. The DeLorean is struck by lightning, Jonas. The DeLorean is struck by lightning. And I wrote it in my synopsis. And he and the DeLorean are sent back to 1885. When a messenger relays, old-timey messenger, by the way, Western Union, I believe, relays Marty this information in a near 70-year-old letter. Marty seeks out help from Doc's 1955 counterpart, who had just sent Marty's previous incarnation back to 1985. Doc faints, and "to be concluded" scrolls across the screen. So there you go. That is a plot synopsis of Back to the Future 2.
All right. So let's just you and me have a debate, but we don't have to take turns talking. We've done this long enough, you and I, a very long time, as a matter of fact. So let's just you and me have a conversation, but I'm going to stick to my guns. And, you know, I'm going to be pretty much all like negative on this movie, and you're going to tell me how wrong I am.
Okay.
or not, I'm gonna suddenly win you over, and you're like, you're right, it does suck. What have I been doing with my life?
Don't think that's happened.
All right, so I talked about this when I read through some of the notes here. Let's start with having Jennifer in the car at the end. Clearly, there was once a time in the film industry where they used to make movies without the intention ahead of time of thinking about sequels.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that about film or not, but sometimes people used to just make movies. And if they did well, maybe they would do another one, tell a new story. But generally speaking, you wrote a script. It had, now I'm going to use a lot of technical jargon here. a beginning, a middle,
okay, one of those,
and an end.
I need explanations, please.
Okay. An opening, a denouement. Stay in frame, Jonas. and a conclusion that resolves the central issue of the plot. Okay. Right?
That's right.
Okay. But they ended this with kind of a stinger, like the adventure continues, you know, but that was essentially the conclusion of the movie. They had, you know, the first one is about finding your courage, being brave, standing up for yourself. That's the arc that Marty's dad goes through. Marty, it's his story, but he's sort of redeeming his dad, who had grown up to be, you know, a pushover and kind of a, you know, schlum, right?
Yeah.
So, but and all that gets resolved by the end. Marty is able to correct the major malfunction of breaking up his parents. He gets them together. And along the way, his dad, George, is able to find his courage, find his spine, believe in himself, and good things come to this family. The fact that they tacked on the Jennifer thing was like, wouldn't this be a fun thing to do at the end of the movie? Like, there's more adventure here. But yeah. But like I said, they really had no intention to do anything else with this, but it did well. And they were like, okay, well, now we're stuck, though. They're stuck with Jennifer. So the point of me bringing all that up here is that whole first 20 minutes to a half an hour of the movie where they're resolving the future storyline feels, and I said this in the original Long Road to Ruin, so this is a bit of a rehash, but if you haven't heard it, it's new to you. It's very hackneyed, in my opinion. It feels tacked on. It feels like because they wrote themselves into a corner, they were like, okay, whatever we need to do to get ourselves out of this corner. So, you know, the whole plot of this is your kid. The last thing Doc Brown says to Marty is your kids are in trouble, but what about Jennifer? This concerns her too. Get her in the car. Yeah. And then you get to, and you're like, what could possibly be going on with Marty's children that both of his parents from 1985 need to get involved and come and fix the situation. And then you as a viewer get there and you find out, oh, Doc didn't know what to do with her. Like, I guess punching her in the face and leaving her in the driveway wasn't an option. So, couldn't do that, you know, couldn't be like, well, go home, whore, you know, like that's not an option.
Oh,
so it's like, throw her in the car, but I really didn't, but Marty, I really didn't need her is the whole thing. Okay. That's not good writing. You know, like when they were workshopping this, when they were, sitting at the table trying to figure out what the script was going to be, they needed a strong story. Especially if you can't get the original actress back, and you're going to go a step up in Elizabeth Shue, not Ally Sheedy or Molly Ringwald.
That's correct.
Or anybody else from the Brat Pack. if you're going to, I mean, Elizabeth Shue, big time actress in 1985, right?
She's definitely on her way up for sure.
Yeah. So if you're going to have Elizabeth Shue in your movie, do something with her. They do nothing with her. She spends most of it in a nap, and when she's awake, she freaks out a little bit. She runs around the house. She meets herself, passes out again, and then they throw her in the car like a sack of trash, and they take her back to the present,
yeah,
or the alternate present by this point. I don't think that's very strong writing. You know what I mean? You can jump in anytime. You want to? I mean, you can see me now, so if I see you wanting to talk, I will shut the.
Well, no, you're doing fine, man. There was a. And I don't know how much of this, because I didn't see in some of my research, but I did probably about 2 months ago, I listened to a book It was an audio book, as a matter of fact. It was on the trilogy. And one of the things that they were talking about, I want to double check this to make sure it was correct, because it was either Leah Thompson, I'm pretty sure it was Elizabeth Shue. At the time of filming, she suffered a pretty bad tragedy where her brother had actually, I'm going to double check this just to make sure, but her brother had apparently was on a tire swing or some type of a swing, and it came down onto a stick and impaled him, and he died.
Oh, God.
So I want to double check and make sure that this is correct, because if it was somebody else, I'll make I'm going to make a fool of myself. But regardless, if that's the case, okay, she's probably not going to be on the best in the best mindset to be
for sure
to do this. So the other thing is that she, if you bring her in, they already had to rewrite something. They already had to rewrite because Crispin Glover had his stance, we'll just say, and he said he wasn't coming back. Supposedly it was a salary disagreement. He wasn't coming back. So they already had to rewrite the script. Now they got Elizabeth Shue involved. The script that they did, okay, sure, they may have been able, I should say, Jennifer involved in the second one and the third one. But the script that they wrote, you know, they may have felt at that point in time that there was, if we're going to keep her in as a character, it's going to take a lot of work for us to make her matter. Really, the Trinity here, let's say a Trinity, but I mean, if you look at it from part one, you got Doc Brown, Marty McFly, and we'll say Marty's parents. Okay. So we'll count them as one unit. Mm-hmm. Well, half of that other unit's gone. Right. And then you can't really, they probably couldn't come up with a good way to wriggle Jennifer in there as an important character for two and three at the same time. But yeah, so me personally, I didn't mind her being in the car, and then Doc's like, okay, we need you out of the picture for a little bit. Now, granted, she does further the plot a little bit along there as she goes and gets captured. She gets taken back to her own house, and that's where we learn about the whole Marty being fired, and because he's a chicken, you can't call him chicken, which is a whole other thing.
We're still stuck on the force feeding of Jennifer into the shit script. Wait till we get to how juvenile this thing gets. they curse in the first one. Like, Marty says shit a few times. Like, there's something, by the way, my daughter's priceless reactions to some of the more adult fare in Back to the Future. Like, people don't know, because it's like, oh, it's one of those, like, you know, kind of childish 80s movies. You watch that thing, man. Like, you know, Leah Thompson in a bra. There's a sexual assault. I played the pitch meeting for my kids today. And he's like, and there's going to be a sexual assault there. What? By the way, I turned them into big pitch meeting fans.
Oh, wow.
That we watched the pitch meeting for this, and then for Back to the Future. And then my son wanted to watch the pitch meeting for the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Ugh. Oh, no.
Hey, we're on video. People can see me pull my collar now.
So I just hopped on to Google here, and it's saying that tragedy happened in 1998, which is way after this. So that might be why.
So that would not have affected this movie.
I wonder why that guy quoted that as being in the. Anyway, all right. Moving on. So
fake news, Jesse. Fake news. Look,
I listened to a book. Okay, that's more.
Well, you know what I say. Books are for burning.
It wasn't the title of an article. I can tell you that much. It was an actual book that I listened to that was inside the book. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, wipe that off the docket, please.
stricken from the record, Your Honor.
Struck. But yeah, man, I don't know. You bring her in, and yeah, she's kind of, they specifically said they didn't want her in the vehicle. But now they've got to kind of,
but then you're obligated to write the woman.
No,
here's the thing. You're obligated to write a strong story. Hang on. Can I submit this as evidence to the court?
Okay.
If you're going to make a movie, you should strive to make it good.
Hold on. Now, that's where I'm like, okay, I don't feel that getting her out of the picture is bad. How is it bad? You just find a way to remove her.
They went out of their way to push her in the pool so they could focus on Marty and Doc.
Yes. And they felt was necessary at the time.
It's not strong writing, but okay. So we don't spend the next hour and a half debating the one item of this movie. My contention is that basically they wrote garbage to get themselves out of the Jennifer corner, and they misused Elizabeth Shue. I don't care what your book, your audiobook tells you.
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's fine. You believe as a
Do you think they wrote themselves out of the corner well? You can say, I mean, like that's a valid point to make. I don't agree, but if that's your point, you can make it.
I mean, what's the easiest way to get her out? Okay. Well, she's
shoot her in the head.
She's knocked out.
Bang.
Doc has to, you find out that Doc doesn't want her to know that time travel exists, as he does. He doesn't want anybody to know that time travel exists.
Right.
So, you know, if you bring her in as a companion to Doc and Marty, that flies in the face of everything that Doc Brown believes in. And that's one more person that knows that time travel actually exists and can get the secret out or whatever. So Doc has to take measures to make sure that he secures the knowledge of time travel until he gets a handle on it. Because right now, everything, since he's built the time machine, everything's within the first time it's used. Well, I should say the second time it's used, it's gone to shit. It's completely gone out the window. So I don't blame him for getting Jennifer out of the way, because if he can convince her it's a dream, which that's what happens, there you go. You have one less person you got to worry about that knows what time travel is.
What
makes sense for Doc Brown.
You know what would have helped them write a better story for your Jennifer?
Tell me.
Grammarly.
Tell me more.
If the writers of Back to the Future 2 had Grammarly's AI-powered products, it would have helped them and all people of the world that use Grammarly communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly everywhere else you write on the web, including your screenplays. Grammarly. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, spelling mistakes, while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M network to download Grammarly for free. And these links will be available to you in the description of this podcast, whether you're listening on audio or you're watching on YouTube or wherever else this visual medium may end up in its life. Like it's going off to college or something. All right. So let's move on from Jennifer. Here's my next problem with this movie.
Okay.
We talked about the technology. This is very George Lucas-y in that George Lucas got his hands for the prequels on some pretty state of the art CGI technology. And as I've often joked that the Phantom Menace is really his digital effects reel. It's not a real movie. It's like his excuse to be like, look what I can do with computers now. Kind of like the new Alfred Hitchcock, like actus schmactus. We'll just digitize the whole thing. It'll be fine. Jar Jar Binks, it's fine. Sell some toys, it's fine. It feels like they're like, all right, step one, Jennifer. All right, turn page. We've dealt with her. She's in the pool. She's drowning. She's dead.
Knocked out.
She's dead, Jim.
Dead, Jim.
She's gone out of the movie.
Okay.
What's the next thing we do? Well, we have this special effects thing that we can do where Marty can play multiple characters. Okay. Well, I almost feel like the logic was, well, we had Leah Thompson playing, two versions of herself, and Crispin Glover playing two versions of himself, and what's-his-face who plays Biff playing two versions of him. Was it Thomas? What now? What's his name?
Thomas F. Wilson.
Thomas F. Wilson playing two versions of himself. And there's, like little characters like the principal and whatnot. You're a slacker. Slacker. Slacker.
Slacker.
Slacker. Yeah, and that'll be the next point I make is the juvenile dialogue in this thing. But anyway, sticking with my problems with this movie, and it seemed like they're like, well, what else are we going to do once we shove Jennifer in the pool and we resolve the thing, he says the kids are in trouble. You must save your children. Okay. We resolve that. Well, what else are we going to do in the future once we've kind of done things like Jaws 67 or whatever it was, and the Cubs win the World Series. And now we have hoverboards and 50s diners or 80s diners because it's 30 years later and whatever.
Welcome to video, folks.
You woo! I used to have to describe stuff like that. for you people listening in on audio podcasts, I made a jerk off motion, such as my issue with this movie. Anyway, so long story short, too late. They play around with what the future might look like. They do a couple of different bits here and there. We get a fun, you know, chase scene, which resembles the chase scene from the first one, which is another issue I have with this movie. But sticking with the use of the technology, it just seemed like they just wanted to... It comes across as hackneyed. Like, they just wanted to do it. They just wanted to show, look, Marty, Michael J. Fox can play multiple versions of himself. A girl version, a young boy version, this version, that version. And they can all interact, and that's the big headline here. Oh, look what we did. We CGI'd an army. We had Michael J. Fox interacting with himself. Isn't this wonderful? Movie magic! And it was like, okay, but so what? Like, the girl character does nothing. The boy character is not somebody I want to follow on screen. He's, they went out of their way to make him a schlub. They were successful, but he never gets likable after that. It's not like, but if only his father would redeem him the way Michael J. Fox redeemed Crispin Glover, he would be better. Nope, he's a bag of shit through the entire sequence, and you're just glad to be done with him. The girl is a nothing character, and the whole sequence is just an excuse to do it. It doesn't really add anything to the movie. I mean, you already know that, like, the family went off the deep end. The one thing that kind of resonates in the movie, and it's extremely juvenile and poorly written, because this wasn't a thing that happened in the first movie. They invented it for the second one. And it's like I said, the first one was clearly meant for a broad general audience, but it had adult themes and it had some adult things going on with it. And, parental discretion is advised. The second one, Marty McFly goes off the deep end crazy because he gets called chicken. Destroys his life and repeatedly destroys his family because he was called chicken. This is a middle-aged man, Jesse Stark. Let me ask you a question.
Oh, boy.
Motherfucker calls you chicken. You down to fight?
The other cheek, sir. Cheek. I turn the other cheek. I mean, look.
God bless you, brother.
I understand where you feel that is something that is very juvenile. And I agree. I mean, really.
Oh, good. Case dismissed.
Yeah, whatever. It's as basic as you could get to kind of drive a very small subplot along for Marty McFly. Okay, it feels like it's kind of contrived in a way where they make him so upset.
Very contrived.
So upset that he gets called chicken that he has, like you said, he gets fired. We watch it happen. Okay, that is.
But even before that, like the thing with Needles, who is played by Flea in the movie, they'll deal with it in the next movie. They'll actually show it, like the Kobayashi Maru. But it's alluded to in this one that Flea called him, or Needles called him, a chicken, and they drag raced, and he got T-boned, and he couldn't play the piano again. Yeah, he could no longer play the piano.
It's a guitar, but we'll go ahead and leave it at that.
But it's funny, I'd say piano.
There was another, okay. well, there's, what you're looking at here is a bit of impetus for character growth. Mm-hmm. All right, Marty has to evolve somehow. If he's just the same Marty throughout all three, I mean, we liked him in the first one. Is it going to wear on us? Is this character? We could be sitting here complaining that he didn't have any growth whatsoever if that wasn't in there. Now, could there have been something better? Possibly, but we needed something that involved consequences of time travel and a way to change it. All right.
Okay.
Basic way to do that is, have Marty learn to be able to handle somebody threatening him in a different way. One of the things that I love about 2 and 3 is that 2 is laden with a lot of setup for payoffs in the third one. And I think for me, since we're looking at these movies, I know we're just looking at 2.
Hang on 1 second. Okay. That's actually a big problem I have with this movie, is that it doesn't stand on its own. It's a bridge. It's a bridge to the third movie, which by itself, like if you don't see the first 2 with a little bit of exposition, 3 stands on its own. It's a perfectly good Western adventure story with a little bit of science fiction in there. It's great. I people are crazy for thinking otherwise. The first one obviously is a classic. No argument there. We're not debating the merits of the first one. But that's the thing. The second one always felt to me like, you know, this was the argument that I made on Long Road to Ruin. It just felt like we got to get to the third movie. And so we're doing all of this other stuff. I will say this, and I don't want to get too far ahead. I want to kind of take these points one by one. The strongest stuff of the movie is the hellscape where, you know, Biff is in charge. That segment of the movie is the strongest part of it. The problem is it's bookended by garbage on either side. And I said that back then, and I think that was one of the things that, like, you were like, oh, Rattledge. But I really do feel like that. Like, the stuff with Biff in the hellscape is really, really good and actually really, really strong. I don't know how much of that it goes into also, you know, him dealing with his chicken issue. I think it might have come up once. I don't remember. But, you know, your point of it's a hurdle for him to overcome. It's an arc that he has to go on to get over being a 10-year-old child. Okay, sure.
It's pride. It's all about pride and not being... What do we see at the very conclusion of the third one? That is Biff Tannen, excuse me, Mad Dog Tannen, calling him out in order for a gunfight. Life and death, Mark Rattledge.
Yeah.
Okay. It becomes life and death back in the 1880s. When somebody calls you a chicken, you better step up.
Pretty sure in the Old West, they weren't calling each other chicken.
Okay. You yella? There you go. That's what happened.
I'm thinking there was probably a motherfucker in there.
I don't think so. This was, but yeah, you know, he has to learn not to face Biff, excuse me, Mad Dog, in the streets.
Or in the sheets.
Well, he does kind of face him in the streets because he has to. But
you know what they say about a street fight, Jesse?
Tell me, Mark Rattledge.
The street always wins.
That's correct. That is correct.
I've learned Furious 7.
So anyway, I mean, yeah, it's an arc and it feels very basic. I understand what you're saying, but it sets up things as we move forward into the third one. And your point about this being, hey, we've got to get to the third one. Well, yeah, that's the way this was written. These two movies were written as one.
Okay, let me give you a better example of this kind of thing. Empire Strikes Back, which I may or may not have been written at the same time as Return of the Jedi. I honestly don't remember anymore. But you know what else was written? Written and I think shot at the same time as the third one. The Matrix Reloaded.
Okay.
The Matrix Reloaded is outside of the hour and a half long, you know, dancing orgy scene.
Yeah.
The big reason I can't show the Matrix trilogy to my kids, because I'm not sitting through that especially with my daughter the way she is. I'm not sitting through that shit.
Yeah, there's going to be questions.
There's questions. My daughter is going to throw the couch at the television in a She-Hulk moment. My son will think it's great though.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Maybe a little long. He's like, cutting into my Switch time. Anyway, outside of the dancing orgy scene in the Matrix Reloaded, what's the third one called? Matrix Forever? Matrix Park?
Matrix Park.
I'm doing bits now.
Okay. Yeah.
The Matrix Jedi.
It's Matrix Revolutions, right?
That's got to be the third one then, because the second one was Matrix Reloaded.
Reload, yeah. So Matrix Revolutions is the third one.
Okay. Anyway, I want to say when they knew, you know, kind of like very similar to Back to the Future. The first one hits, they're like, well, you know, there's got to be more. Hey, remember this one, Jesse? More dinosaurs. Yeah, for you people first time listening to this, More Dinosaurs is a bit that I came up with when we reviewed the Jurassic Park trilogy. It means that when a when something hits with a studio, they don't ask about what works and what doesn't work. They just know that a thing was popular and they want more of it. More is spelled M-O-R-A, by the way. Remember you sent me a onesie that said more dinosaurs on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did.
For Lily, I think it was. Was it for Lily? No, it was for Jonas. It was for Jonas. Mm-hmm. Moving on. In any case, so with The Matrix, like the Matrix 2 is a strong movie that doesn't feel like they're just in a fucking rush to get to the mall, you know, to get to the third one.
Yeah.
There was a story they were telling, and it does have a cliffhanger ending, but I still think The Matrix 2 stands on its own. And, you know, later this year when The Matrix 4 comes out, you can hear me and I think it's Sam Riccati, it was either Sam or Robert Winfrey, I don't remember anymore, talking the entire Matrix trilogy from an old Long Road to Ruin. That'll be out later this year. Plug, plug. Having fun with video. Plug, plug. Anyway, so like I've seen it done better. You know, I've seen where they work on 2 and 3 at the same time, where they work on 2 with the intention of doing 3. But hell, how about the best sequel ever? One of the best sequels ever to be made out of a trilogy, The Dark Knight.
Okay.
The Dark Knight's not in a big rush to get to The Dark Knight Rises.
Do me a favor and come up with a science fiction comedy trilogy. Oh, wait. You can't, because there's...
I was thinking Porky's.
Yeah. A lot of time travel on that. It's crazy. You have to write something that is similar to the vein of the first one. It's a science fiction comedy. There's more science fiction in 2 than I believe there was in the first part.
I don't believe that's any part of my argument, though. No. I said this is just not a well-written movie, and it seems like a rush to get to the third one.
I think if you look at the ones that you're quoting, they're totally different genres. They're not science fiction comedies. And I think that when it comes to writing something, it's a different thing.
How about Toy Story?
Toy Story is an animated trilogy, quadrilogy. It's 4 parts now, isn't there?
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that fourth one.
Oh, really?
or we did, and then we forgot about it. It's terrible.
I don't think that you can compare it to other films. You can say, okay.
But I'm only comparing it to the strength of the writing.
Okay. I don't know. I think you're not handcuffed by the genre, but you are at least, you have to come up with something good inside the genre. It's not going to come across very well to people.
Your argument is that it is what it is because of the limitations of the action comedy science fiction genre.
I will give it that. Yes. And the fact that it's, again, it's written as part 2 and part 3 is one movie. So you, I think what you wanted is you want something completely separate that just kind of gently leads into the third. And that's just not the way this was written. It just isn't.
I mean, Empire, I think, stands on its own while also being the middle chapter. I mean, you know, Empire tells the story of Luke getting ahead of himself and getting his comeuppance for it and being humbled and realizing, hey, I'm not quite ready to be a Jedi, and we'll see him, you know, grow by the time we get to the third movie. I've heard other reviewers talk about, and Sean and I talked about this when we did the On Trial for Empire Strikes Back, that it kind of just feels like a medley of things happening, but there is a central narrative with Luke. And again, I would argue that Empire A stands on its own, and B isn't in any way hampered by its own genre to where they're forced to write a subpar movie just to get to the third one.
It's tough for me to argue against that because I've never seen, I haven't seen 2 before I saw the first one and leading into the third one. I remember watching those in succession. So, I can't look at it and say, well, yeah, you know, put this on for the kids. At no point, we did last year, we, during the pandemic, we did Star Wars Sundays, and that went on for, I don't know how long, but
9 weeks, perhaps.
Well, no, we did Solo and all the extra stuff that happened in there. And I remember like not wanting to skip anything. I definitely didn't want to skip showing somebody part two. Absent of part one and part three of, well, I shouldn't say part two. I should say Empire Strikes Back. Showing them absent of knowledge of the other two. I mean, I would look at it like, holy crap, this is a very dark film. This is a very dark film. And there's no way I would sit. You just told me earlier, you can't sit the kids down and show them just part two and expect that to go off very well. So if you're going to say that it isn't good because it doesn't stand on its own, I would say that Empire Strikes Back does not stand on its own. You have to know what came before. I think that that is something that has to happen. And you definitely want to know what's going to happen at the end. Dude, that is the darkest film of those three. Empire Strikes Back is dark. Right. And if you look at the criticism that Back to the Future 2 gets, there was quite a few things that I read today where they were saying, it's not as funny as the first one. It's pretty dark. Like, well, okay. But
is that really like a big problem with this? Is like they wanted it to be lighter and the hellscape just brings the whole movie down?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You see a lot of people get upset because, you know, the Biferific universe, I mean, my goodness, things have gone bad. But
I understand that a lot of people are pussies.
but you also talk to other people and they say, well, Empire Strikes Back is the greatest sequel of all time.
Right. That's the Dante argument.
I don't know, man. In my opinion, with them, you can't criticize this movie and say that it's bad when number one, it's one film that's split into two parts, part two and part three. Well, we have to get to, how are we going to get to part three without going through part two? And they set everything up that was supposed to get resolved in part three in the sequel.
I want to round back to something because we've talked about 2 points, but I don't think we really conclusively ended point two, because the first point was Jennifer. Second point was the using the technology just to use it, but not using it well. That kind of bled into the movie doesn't stand on its own, which, you know, automatically makes it a poor movie. So I just kind of want to hear your defense of the use of technology, because my contention is that it's used in a dumb way with characters I don't care about. And it's just kind of, ta-da, we did it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you there, because innovation has to start somewhere. If you could do something, you're going to do it. So this is 1989. Yeah, it's used all over. We've seen it all over the place. We're in 2021. It's commonplace to see CGI, and they've perfected that art.
Dude, we've been digitally like de-aging or aging people for over a decade now. Yeah. Yeah, that too. I was thinking of, like, I don't remember what year X-Men 3 came out, but I mean, if you'll recall, they digitally de-aged Patrick Stewart and Sir Patrick Moynihan, whatever the hell his name is, Magneto.
Yeah. Well, so
not going to correct me, Hal. We're just going to stick with Sir Patrick Moynihan.
I'm on video. I can't go over here.
The fuck he's talking about.
But you have to start somewhere. And I think that, we could do this. Throw them in there. We have the trailer you showed. We didn't get the audio, but I know it's Michael J. Fox. And starring Michael J. Fox. And Michael J. Fox. And Michael J. Fox. That was innovative at the time. People were like, oh my goodness.
Innovation without purpose is empty.
You have to show the family.
You're just doing a stunt. Demo reel.
Maybe you could look at it financially as, hey, I only have to pay one person to do this job. Okay. All right.
But what of the story, Jesse?
What about the art? The art.
What of the story? Don't you understand?
Yeah. Well, okay. We got to meet his family. I mean, that's clearly we need to learn about the children. it set it up in the first one. Something's got to be done about your kids.
Okay, we needed to meet Marty Jr. and we needed to meet the daughter because I think he says children. And I don't know if they even specified at the end of the first one. I don't remember any. That was hours ago before my prime rib au jus.
It's your kids, Marty.
It's your kid. Yeah. Right. Okay. So we don't even, could have been two boys, could have been two girls, could have been conjoined twins for all we knew.
Yeah. That'd have been interesting. That'd been some CGI.
Yeah, it would have been. So there was clearly a decided thing they were going to do here of his kids are going to be played by him, which is a playoff of the first one where the actors were playing younger versions of themselves. But the actors played younger versions of themselves because it was a fucking time travel movie.
Well,
can I ask you a question? You have three children.
Yes.
They clearly have some of your genetics.
Yes.
They clearly have some of Mindy's genetics.
Yes.
By the way, can I tell you how Put It On a T-Shirt Mindy has worked its way into my normal like vernacular?
I love thinking about that.
I say to people at work, people have no idea who the fuck Mindy is, but I just say it as like a common turn of phrase now, like blah blah yakety schmackety, put it on a T-shirt, Mindy.
I love how like people at your job must just be like so accepting and be like, oh, there he fucking goes again.
I think earlier today when I was recording with Harry Broadhurst of the Kickoff, I might have yelled out, shout out to you, guy.
Golf clap.
The Rattlesnake Broadcasting drinking game. We'll say a catchphrase. You yell out bingo.
That's right.
Anyway.
That's fucking fantastic.
So, it's just
genetics. You know, yes.
So, yeah, your kids. I've seen your kids. They bear some resemblance to you. They don't look like the milkman. My kids have looked somewhat like me. My son, though, is not like the spitting image of my actual face, nor is my daughter the spitting image of her mother's face.
I was just watching an old home
Neither
video.
One of my kids look like one of us in drag.
I was just watching an old home video with my mom yesterday, okay?
And she was in drag?
No. not going off of that. I was 11. So I was the age my son is right now. And I came walking into frame and I thought it legitimately was Caleb because I knew it couldn't have been, but I was like, man, you look at that kid.
Time
and
travel.
That was me back in 2000 or in 1990, 1989, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I believe in some aspect of that. Yes, what I think that they decided was, look, your kids are going to look like you. This isn't that far-fetched. We have the technology. We have the technology. We can build him better. They are, they bring in Michael J. Fox. Hey, you into dressing up in drag? You into dressing up like your kids?
Well, who isn't?
Well, yeah, he's like, I've been doing that for years. I personally, it doesn't bother me. I mean, yes, they are kind of throwaway characters. There's obviously nothing else we have to do with the rest of the family. Mm-hmm. Other than we just got to get that portion of Marty doesn't like being called a chicken. We got to set up the accident in the third film, and we got to get Jennifer the hell out of there. But look at this crazy world, Mark. I mean, they went into 2015. You are immersed into some of the craziest technology. They're thinking 25 years ahead of its time.
It would have been nice to explore that world a little bit more.
Well,
and do other things with it other than kind of pointing at a sight gag.
It's going to cost some money to do that. So they're like, well, how about we just, okay, here's everything. Here's not Times Square. My goodness. Hill Valley. Now see, I'm failing. What was the name of the, this town square, basically. Mm-hmm. They got to show you everything around there, the Hill Valley of 2015, but you just can't continue to do that. So they brought it home and they showed his family. You wanted to know, you wanted to see. You couldn't tell me that you didn't want to see what his family life was like. You know, here's this kid with all these hopes and dreams. That's set up in the first one. He wants to become a rock star. He wants to be established.
And film should be a staircase. Things should build on each other.
It shows you that he failed.
If you're just throwing things in there to do them, like always, or he's like, oh, it just isn't this funny. I think that's my central argument. Like, if someone was like, could you just, like, what do you hate Back to the Future 2? I just feel like outside of that cherry portion in the middle that deals with the Biff hellscape, can I tell you how Biff's the most interesting character in this entire movie?
The murderous rapist?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I want to get to that real quick, but I want to close up this point. You know, they don't explore the future world at all. They really don't make good use of it. It's just kind of, it's just shallow. It's a very shallow movie, which, hang on, I'll go ahead and make the argument that who cares? Like, obviously, I mean, go back to our like Cruella review. We talked about that being a very shallow movie too, and people loved it. We talked about Joker being, you know, a movie filled with depth, and people preferred Cruella, and I wanted to walk into traffic. Robert Winfrey's not here right now, so I can say this without being yelled at. Inside Out, Minions. Minions made more money. People enjoyed it more, even though it had all the depth of this phone. Eh? Video. It's flat. Take a drink every time I do something visual that people on audio are not going to get.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough transition.
Well, no, I keep doing a bit about it because I'm a silly goose. Anyway, my point being, I don't feel like the family stuff. It was just kind of there, but there's no depth to it. It doesn't really add anything to the movie. And what it does sort of lend itself to in terms of depth is very juvenile. You know, we talked about it before, like the chicken thing. I'm gonna give you the last point on this, and then we got to talk about Biff.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm gonna just kind of accentuate what I said there before you kind of closed up on that point, which is, you know, it does show you that Marty McFly is going to turn out just like me and you, some schlub who's going back to work day to day, dealing with bosses, supervisors, and has, you know, two kids that are tired of his shenanigans. Well, number one, I love how, you know, the phone rings and the daughter kind of takes her Google Glass off or whatever. Dad, it's for you. You know, it's that stuff that we all experience as fathers. And when you're looking at Marty McFly,
why couldn't they hire an actress to just play his daughter? Why did we have to waste this technology on a nothing character?
For 90 people that would come up to you and say, why did we have to do this? There's 100 that's going to come to you and say, why not? Why not? Why not Marty McFly dressed up in drag, acting like his own daughter?
Okay, but then why not do something interesting with her? Why does she have
to? I don't understand what makes it less interesting. She is just the daughter of Marty McFly, and she's not there really to do anything else other than...
So she's a cardboard cutout.
If she is just, for writing's sake... Yeah, you put your ear up against...
with headphones on.
With headphones on. If she is just there, and no addition to the plot whatsoever, which that's pretty much what she is. There's no addition to... Let's show off a little bit. How about we show them what we can do with our makeup and our CGI? Okay, all right, let's do it. There you go.
What if she were a Lovecraftian monster instead?
So,
with Michael J. Fox's face.
As I was saying, Marty McFly has the world in front of him.
What if she were
traveled? What could possibly be in store for this guy? Guess what, Mark Radulich? He turns out like you and me. And not only that, he ruined his whole life by getting into a severe car accident. I'm going to flip you off now. What if
she were one of the robots from The Phantom Menace? Roger, roger.
Hercules, get Eddie Murphy in on this.
I feel like they made more use of those characters. They actually had personality.
They built it around. That was the whole movie. Just move. What was the next thing we were talking about?
I mean, here's the thing. Like I said, the Biff story is actually the most interesting thing about this movie. Like the idea of this guy got cheated out of his bully life by a Crispin Glover who finally found his spine. And then he went into middle age and he became a schlub and he was kind of a little afraid of George. What if he strikes me again? That sort of thing. And then he grows to be an old man and he's kind of looking back on his life. Like, I kind of want the problem with these movies is that they treat every single one of these characters. I said before, like cardboard cutouts, everyone's a caricature. Old Biff, I kind of wanted to get to know a little bit more. And I wish we had spent more time with him because he has an awesome revenge plot. He's like, what if I could change my fortune? What if I could give my younger self this almanac and I can make all my dreams come true? I could marry Lorraine. I can get rid of George. I could have all the money. And I could run this town, run it inside out. Right? That's great. Like, I have no qualms with any of the Biff stuff going all the way through. That whole, honestly, my biggest complaints, like I said, are when they go to 2015 and then when they go back to 1955. Mm-hmm. The middle part where they're in 1985 hellscape, the what do you call it? The Bifferific universe?
Bifferific, yes, sir.
The Bifferific universe. I actually don't have a major problem. Like, Leah Thompson's great as, like, an abused wife. It's like, I brought this on myself. She has an awesome, it's just like, what about these? You know, I didn't want them.
Yeah.
When man boobs help you do an impression. So like stuff like that, like that's all great stuff. You know, that's actually the only like part of the movie. Michael J. Fox isn't also overacting. Christopher Lloyd's not overacting. Christopher Lloyd's not doing like early Kramer, you know, like, it almost felt like directed by a different person. Because the first part of the movie is so like over the top stupid. And then like everyone's more subdued in that second part. And it's almost like it's a different movie. And like I said, I wish they had developed Old Biff more. I wish we'd gotten a little bit more into Old Biff. Like, he's much more interesting than Marty is.
Okay.
Biff. Biff in any iteration of him. And he was just like a dumb bully in the first one. But in this one, like, you kind of see him yelling at, like, you know, his mom and stuff like that. His mom yelling back at him. And he obviously has like kind of a shitty life and stuff like that.
I want you to rub my toes some more.
Yeah. Like, he has, you know, an interesting, it would have been interesting to see more of Biff's life. Like, why is he the way that he is towards George or whatever? And unfortunately, and this is my argument, they don't do enough of that. And then so there's a lot they have to unpack in 1985. So there's really no time to deal with any of that stuff. But when you get to meet like contemporary Biff in 1985, who's killed George and married Lorraine and gave her fake boobs and is screaming and yelling, like he's a great villain, but we don't get to do anything more with him. He just does villain stuff. And again, he's made to look like a yutz. You know, he goes after Marty. Marty goes off the ledge, you know, and of course he gets caught by the car because of course he does. And I'm not going to like bitch and moan about that. But it's like there was an opportunity to give Biff more menace. And instead they went with, you know, they went with the cheap pop of it, basically.
So you're saying that 1985A Biff is not menacing enough? Is that what you're saying?
You're talking about like
Bifferific.
Bifferific. Bifferific Biff could have been more menacing.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, he could have. I think they undercut him by how they resolved that scene with Marty going off the edge.
Okay. Well, no. It
was goofy and it made him look like a yutz. And I kind of wish it was framed a little bit differently to where Marty really was in deep shit. And I wish the resolution was just less goofy. And you know, Biff didn't lose. He just didn't get to Marty in time. Instead of Biff thought he won and he didn't, and he gets made to look like a putz.
I think that that version of Biff is menacing enough, in my opinion. I mean, at no point
should have turned into a dragon.
At no point
we had the technology.
At no point in part one did I see Biff, you know, go for a gun. That was, you know, the innocence of that version of 1985 is clearly gone. And I think even the first movie, the 1955 Biff, he's a bully. And as I was watching the movie as a kid, I just saw him as a bully.
Sure.
You look at it now and you're like, you know, he really stepped over the line quite a bit. He was about to rape that girl.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Because you could say that maybe not. He was just going in for a kiss, whatever. But
no means no.
Yeah. You look at him in 1955, he's just this overbearing bully. And now the bully has gotten everything that he's wanted. And he could kill anybody that he wants. That's set up. I mean, he's done just about everything that he wants to do. He owns the police, kid. He owns them. And that's scary when you know you have no hope. Marty McFly has no hope. How's he getting out of this? Now, okay, he drops off the ledge. Biff goes over and gets knocked out by a gull-wing door. Hokey, I mean, maybe you could spin it as there needed to be some levity here. And Biff getting knocked out by Doc opening up the door of the DeLorean is just enough levity. Because I would have hated to see, you know, them just kind of speed off in the night. And here's Biff just firing off random shots at the DeLorean.
I'd have seen much better.
No.
Good pitch, Jesse.
Prince. At least we got to hit him in the face once. One time. I mean, maybe, he's been.
Why not hit him with a pie? Doc Brown flies up with the car, pie in the face.
He's just shooting randomly in the air. Oh my gosh.
Falls into the hot tub.
No.
Comes up. He's licking his lips. He's like, banana cream.
There is a lot of cartoon elements that I appreciate of this series. If that was in there, I would not like it. I would say no.
I don't see what the difference is.
Like I said, I think it's a little bit of levity. You get to see Biff sort of get his comeuppance, and he gets punched in the face. He's out for the count. So, I mean, he's menacing enough, in my opinion. He's scary. He's the guy that was the bully in the first one, and now there's no stopping him, or is there? So there you go. I'm all right with that.
Last thing we're going to talk about, and then we're going to close up for the night.
Okay.
Okay. The entire 1955 sequence. It needs to happen. It's the resolution of the movie. They need to get the Sparks Almanac back in order to preserve their timeline. Okay? Your premise is strong. I'm with you.
All right.
The problem is this is yet again the gimmick that never dies. It's, oh, look, Michael J. Fox from the first movie running this way. Michael J. Fox from the new movie running this way. Oh, look, they ran past each other.
That's wonderful. Ooh, it's beautiful. No, sir. You put it back in your pants. Zip it up.
I will not.
Stop.
People listening to the only audio. What did he do? I got to find. Did he really
gotta find the video? Find the video, ladies and gentlemen.
Did he pull his dick out on the video? Because I don't want to look, but I got to see if he did. No.
Launching the Patreon just for that.
Behind the paywall, my penis.
Ta-da! No sooner than that happened, people are begging for refunds. They're like, no, I didn't come. I didn't pay for this.
I did not come for this. I may have come for something else, but.
Oh, no.
Oh, look, I used to just do just the purr, but now I can do hand motions with it.
Oh, no.
And jazz hands.
That's a whole different dimension.
Oh, my. We are in 4D now, baby. Woo! Anyway. Just for the sake of time, my big problem.
You mentioned gimmick.
Third segment is really gimmicky.
No, it's innovative. You say gimmick, I say innovation. This is, at any point in film, can you think that this happened? They were able to, we have time travel. That is a plot device we are going to use.
According to my daughter, way too much of it.
Yes, I saw that. And in my conclusion, I will address her. But there is...
Should I get her? Should I bring her on the podcast?
You can listen later.
This 40-year-old man would like to yell at you.
I'd like to address you, please. So there's they at no point in film history can I think of, and I'm not the biggest film buff, but they did this so well. They used plot devices such as time travel to go back into the events of the first movie, show it in a different light, and actually forward the plot along of the sequel.
Okay,
and
this don't disagree with your premise.
Okay.
That's a fun premise. That's an interesting take on the idea. I'm not sold that it couldn't have been executed better. And I think it's not executed in the most interesting way. I feel like it was, we got to show this really famous scene from the first one, but let's twist it around. And they just like, this is essentially my argument for the first part. It's essentially, let's do this. And there was no more thought given to let's just do it. Not what, in what kind of creative way can we do it? What can we do with this scene that reveals something about it we didn't see before that adds to the plot in some really rich way? It's just, what if we just turn the scene around?
No, they absolutely use that last bit. Stop it, Mark Radulich. Tune into the video, ladies and gentlemen. Mark's making a fool of himself. but you cannot say that wasn't used as in order to forward the plot along, because there's the point where it was 1955 Biff and our Marty that we've been following here calls him a chicken. That comes up again. All right. You may not like it, but it does. And he was going to have it out with him, but I think Marty went through a little bit of character development because he learned that I think that doesn't even happen because he's about to face him and he ends up getting knocked out accidentally by his other self when the door comes in and slams him in the face.
I mean, that's legitimately funny, but I'll laugh at a pie in the face or a door in the face.
Sure, sure. But there's a lot of that part that has to go forward. Specifically, I mean, the end of it, obviously, they have to get Doc going back to 1885, and we have to lead in, 1955 has to lead into the beginning of the third movie where Marty goes and finds Doc. So it's essential to the plot. Everything that they did there, they had to get the book back, and 1955 Biff of that first movie has the book now. So I consider it well done because we now have two plots from two separate movies interacting with each other. And yes, they are interacting with each other. They're going this way and they are going that way. But yeah, these are plot, it has to be done. It has to be done. Damn it.
Sorry. I'm a child.
This is the first podcast that you have done on video with somebody else on the other end. I know you did one with your son.
Yeah,
I watched that. Has there been anybody else on the podcast?
No, we are busting a cherry here, sir. Both of us.
Learning a lot tonight.
I am making valid points. I am structuring my arguments, and then there's me on this side.
I could sit there a week ago and not see your face and then get distracted talking to you about some kind of metal album or something.
I'm gonna
I've got to deal now with this.
Fucking future on trials. I'm gonna be like holding up like signs. It's gang bat, screwball.
Best of luck, Sean Cover. This is the last time I'm on this show. Okay. So anyway, I consider it. Yeah, I consider it essential. You say that it's hey, look what we could do. I've never seen it before, and I think that's what makes me a fan of this film. Is like, okay. There's so much stuff that I've never seen done. I will agree.
Placing novelty ahead of film craft.
And I think a lot of other people did the same.
Okay. I mean, that's an argument.
It's not one that's going to win anything here.
Well, we don't have anybody here to really make a judgment. That's, Sean and I joke about that all the time. I'm like, okay, so probation. things like that. Sometimes we both agree, you know, like, yeah, no, let's execute this film. But I think, let me say, I'm going to make my final kind of just overall argument, and then I'm going to give you the last word, and then we'll talk a little bit about the music just briefly. Wink. And then we'll get out of here. That's a setup for the next ad read.
Better write down, get your pencil ready. Write down that time. And dead air silence on the audio version. What could he possibly be doing?
I want Sean to watch this and be like, we got to get rid of Rattledge and all his goofy.
Did I tell him about this?
Yeah, we could have just left him in a stationary box. Anyway, mwah, Sean. I've really made all the points that I feel like need to be made about this. Just in short, I don't feel like the writing is strong. To me, it's very, it's hackneyed and juvenile. I feel like not a lot of thought was given to what they were doing with characters. And in some cases, it was sort of insulting to the actor, what they did do. Where there was an opportunity to really get into your villain and in the best plot of the movie, they kind of ran away from it to do more silly stuff. And in the end, where the novelty is concerned, it's interesting. But once you get past the novelty of it, and I think that's the first few times you see Marty running past himself from a previous movie in a previous time, it's fun and it's interesting. And when they do it 50 times and it doesn't really move the movie along in any real way, it just kind of goes back to, no one seemed to have given this movie a whole lot of thought other than, we got a budget, we got a timeline, and we got an ask from the studio, and we have notes, and let's just get this done. The first one feels like a Steven Spielberg, Robert Zemeckis artistic passion project. It's a story we want to tell with actors, with great actors we have telling this story. The first Back to the Future, I think if I thought hard enough about it, I could find fault with it. I can find fault with anything. But I would agree that it is a classic. And one that, like I said, I watched this morning with my kids and I really enjoyed it. Like, I didn't think about what if anything bothered me about it. The second one almost feels like a Mockbuster ripoff of the first one. Like, it's that level of bad to me, which is why I was so harsh on The Long Road to Ruin, that sparked this whole debate 12 years later in the first place, or however long it was. The trilogy redeems itself with the third one, but that's not what we're here to discuss. I just, ultimately, Your Honor, we would ask for, since we're taking this to trial, we would ask for the maximum sentence of no less than 10 years.
Oh, wow.
No one should be able to watch this movie for 10 years.
You hate this movie, and it makes me so mad. It makes me so upset.
Make your final argument, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, I had a score of notes here, and we covered a good bit of them. You know, there's a lot of bright spots.
Is there anything you didn't cover? Because now's the time.
I'm doing it. There's a lot of bright spots that I find in this film. You know, there's a stark contrast, and this was, I think, mentioned on The Long Road to Ruin as well. Winfrey brought this up. You know, there's a stark contrast of what we used to get in films that took place in the future. We start out, you know, it's raining and it's grim and gritty, but they go down to Hill Valley and the clouds part and everything's bright and cheery. So that's great. You know, love it. The tech, man, you know, you look at the technology that's talked about in the 2015 era in this film, self-lacing shoes, flat screen TVs, screens always in front of you, hoverboards, you know, that stuff's been around for a long, long time. We mentioned about revisiting the film. I think that's a strong point of it as well. I believe that them employing that was not something that you normally saw, especially in 1989, and using it to further the plot of both movies, 2 and 3, and somehow shifting back into 1 as well. It made it infinitely interesting, and also, you know, probably helped shove it as my favorite of this trilogy.
Really? You think it's better than 1 and 3?
It's my favorite. And I don't know if it's better, because talking about better, we've already discussed all the reasons. And if you've listened to this podcast, I don't criticize the writing very often of the films. I enjoy Back to the Future 2 just because of the journey that I'm taking on. I go back to the past. I go to the future. I go to an alternate timeline, Mark Radulich. How many boxes are we checking? You know me. So this satisfies a spark of what I needed. It actually generated a spark for myself, because after watching this film, there were quite a few things that I actually did in my own life just because of how much fun I had and what I wanted more. I wanted more of this. And unfortunately, I felt kind of let down by the third one because we're stuck in 1885. Not only that, we watch, you know, the DeLorean get destroyed, which just broke my heart. But you know, we get the promise of further adventures to come with Mark, you were on the train, weren't you, with the kids and everything?
I definitely ran a train.
All right. So in conclusion, I'll finish up by reading what I wrote here for in conclusion. It's only three paragraphs, so just bear with me. Just kidding.
Exhibit A.
So here you go. We'll just start out with this.
This diagram represents 20% of the population. And this... Go ahead.
I'll start it out with what I was talking about earlier. Some would criticize the second installment as having too much time travel. All right. For me, that's why I love it. I wanted to see the consequences and changes of the actions taken by Marty, Doc, and Biff. And folks, I'm sorry if you don't like time travel and alternate realities. It's kind of hard to avoid those right now. I mean, some of the more popular movies and TV shows are using that plot device. You look at the number two top lifetime grossing film as of today, according to the Google, Avengers Endgame, Mark Radulich. All right?
Sure.
What did the success of the protagonists hinge upon in that film? Traveling to the past to acquire an object of power in order to defeat the murderous villain. All right? Sound familiar? Okay, all right. And in fact, that movie has legitimately spawned a popular TV show called Loki right now. And that is, tell me if you've heard this one before, specifically trying to put the timeline changes back the way they were. Now, that task is really central to the whole Back to the Future franchise itself, but the consequences are really explored in the second film of this franchise. So elements of Back to the Future 2 live on to this day, and the mark of a good movie is one that inspires other creators that come afterwards. So I believe this film has succeeded in that aspect, and I rest my case.
All right. Jesse, did you have fun to have you know, disagreement, arguments, debate, not everyone's favorite thing, but did you have a good time? Because I thought we had a nice discussion.
Oh, I had a blast, man. I had a blast. I always have a good time talking to you.
Do you feel like you've now excised this demon that you can move on with your life, that, you know, you got this monkey off your back?
Forgiveness is a wonderful thing. I think I can forgive you, Mark Radulich.
That's very white of you. Very Christian.
Very white? Oh, that's like wide?
No, white. That's mighty. I just watched that episode of The Big Bang Theory. That's mighty white of you.
Mighty white.
To forgive me for being right.
To forgive you for disagreeing with me.
Okay. Well, God knows I do that to other people. I forgive you for disagreeing with me. It's fine. Folks, holy cow. This has been... What the hell is this?
Oh, that's me. That's me booing you.
When were you booing me?
Most of the podcast, but...
Perfect. I'm like, wait, this is a private recording. Like, who chatted with me? Oh, it's you, you bastard.
You bastard.
All right, folks. So that wraps up this recorded, this video version of On Trial. However, if you listen to it on the regular podcast, whatever podcast catcher you're using, other than constant references to what we're doing on camera, this was no different than what you would normally hear. Speaking of things you would normally hear, this started out as a day where we weren't going to drop much, and then we dropped everything. Apparently, on Twitter, hashtag release the Schumacher cut was trending. So we bumped up a planned re-airing of The Long Road to Ruin, Batman, the Schumacher years from next year when the Robin Pattinson Batman comes out to today, as a matter of fact. So
oh my.
An old Long Road to Ruin is in the archives to go along with the Twitter release, the Schumacher cut. Jesse, you released an Unspoken Issues.
I did, as a matter of fact. Unspoken Issues number 33 hit the airwaves. Secret Defenders number 1, where Chris Armstrong and myself talk about the dangers of fighting crime with a baby strapped to your back, and Spider-Woman and Wolverine. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Nomad's in there. Doctor Strange is putting together a crazy team. We get three villains that show up in that issue and the next issue, and I think the subsequent issue after that, and then that's it. Brand new villains, and you never see them again. So it was a one and done, but it was a lot of fun. I love talking 90s comics with Chris Armstrong, so check that out.
We talked earlier about how this was the inaugural official video podcast of the Rattlegen Broadcasting Network. The thing I did with my son was sort of a test drive so I could get used to the StreamYard technology, but this was the beginning of a new era. But it was actually supposed to take place earlier today. But between me working an overnight and then coming home and immediately recording and I was not camera ready. And Harry Broadhurst not being camera ready. We decided to do it the old-fashioned way. I fired up old Betsy and we recorded strictly audio. We reviewed NXT TakeOver In Yo House. And we reviewed Impact Against All Odds 2021 featuring Kenny Omega versus Moose.
Thought for a second, NXT fuck your couch.
NXT fuck your couch. I should have never given y'all money. I did it myself. I did that clean.
Nice.
We've now referenced it a few times. It's in the archive. It's the old the Long Road to Ruin, Back to the Future re-air featuring a title card art by Benjamin J. Colon. The links to all of his things are in the description of that. That's on YouTube. That's on all the podcatchers. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to it, and you can't find it on whatever it is you found this on, check it out in the archives or on the W2M webpage so that you have a little more context of what generated this discussion.
Real quick.
Yes, sir.
Real quick. We did this on a Wednesday. All right. Right.
Yes,
sir. Is it airing today as well? As soon as we get everything.
It'll air shortly after midnight Thursday.
Now, I know this kind of took the place of we had a themed Back to the Future week, and we were going to do some stuff with Back to the Future music.
Yeah, boy, did that fall apart.
That quickly fell apart, but where could maybe they possibly find the soundtrack at?
Oh, you're so right, Jesse Starcher. You could. I mean, we were going to play around with the Back to the Future soundtrack, and the Back to the Future soundtrack featuring Huey Lewis and the News. No Huey, no news, no sir.
Thanks.
No thanks.
No sir.
No sir.
No way.
No way.
Sorry, Neil. I know you're watching, buddy.
I need that shirt. Maybe I'll wear it on the podcast. Like,
Oh, I got them all lined up. Me and you, when we start doing this thing, we're going to be talking about each other's shit.
Do you know how funny it was earlier? Because I had to, you know, make sure that I was appropriately dressed for this. Like going to turn to my wife, going, "What of my many t-shirts should I wear on the podcast? What says Back to the Future?" Her answer to me was, "Motherfucker, you still."
That's how she starts every conversation.
With the hand, with the gun motion, and everything. My.
Thug wife.
Very Caucasian wife.
Yeah, thug life and thug wife.
Just thug life right here. Anyway. I did that at work the other day. I was like, yeah, I tend to do a lot of the gold dust thing, and I did that at work, and the woman was like, whoa. Anyway. She was like, if you start buying t-shirts for the podcast you're doing, like, you know, like, oh, I have like a Back to the Future Back to the Future t-shirt for the Back to the Future podcast. She was like, I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, no. We have a mortgage. I'm not doing that.
Please.
I promise. Specialty t-shirts for every podcast for the 500 I do in a week.
I don't own one Back to the Future shirt. That's it kind of upsets me. I own all sorts of other shit.
Christmas time. What size are you?
Right now I'm a 3. I'm hoping to get to 2, but put me down as a 3X, Mark Rattles. Okay.
Well, Huey Lewis, no Huey, no Lewis, no thanks.
No way.
No way. Back to the Future shirt. Eh?
I'll tell you, I have my eye on one that just says, "What, Lorraine? What?"
Nice. And Steve Austin looking at a fake wristwatch.
Something like that.
Anyway, 20 minutes ago, we were supposed to do an Amazon Music ad read. You can find the Back to the Future soundtrack on AmazonMusic.com. And if you would like to stream it for free, along with any other soundtracks or any other music you might want to listen to, if you want to listen to Huey Lewis in the News, and really, why wouldn't you? You can check out our link at getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. That's getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network to stream Amazon Music. Get a free 30 days. If you like it, you keep it. You pay the monthly fee like you would with any streaming service like Apple Music or Spotify. You don't like it, you cancel it. No fuss, no muss. Everyone get on the bus. All right, back to the schedule. Jesse and I did our Green Jelly review, Garbage Band Kids, on the Metal Hammer of Doom on Monday. Tomorrow, I love you, tomorrow, myself, Alexis Haina, and my daughter, Lily, who's a big fan of musicals, will be reviewing In the Heights on Damn You Hollywood. And then after my wife and I get done watching the China documentary on Vice TV, it's our usual.
That's what's upcoming on China. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, the first half of Dark Side of the Ring ended, and then so in its time slot, they put this two-hour China documentary.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's our Thursday night, you know, in the house date that we do. We watch wrestling documentaries. But once that's done, Pat Mullen, who may or may not be on camera, may or may not be surrounded by whores, allegedly, may or may not be shirtless.
I'm tuning in.
Yeah, I may go live for that.
Now I'm sold.
It's like, if you'd like to see Pat with no shirt on, send a dollar.
Behind the paywall, Pat's breasts.
We will be discussing the first half of Dark Side of the Ring, featuring Dynamite Kid, Ultimate Warrior, the disgusting Grizzly Smith and his poor children, Jake the Snake and Rockin' Robin, and Sam Houston. Collision in Korea, Outlaw Mud Show, Deathmatch Wrestler, Nick Gage.
Ooh, that was awesome.
Yeah, Brian Pillman, they're all here, and we're going to talk about them on Dark Side of the Ring TV Party, Season 3A. On Friday, Chris Bailey. We'll have a re-airing of Inside Out to coincide with the release of Luca, which was getting a theatrical release, but is now going to be strictly Disney Plus, not even premium Disney, because fuck Pixar. So, yeah, Luca's airing on Disney Plus. So, we're re-airing our old Inside Out Damn You Hollywood review. And in the evening time, once I get back from The Fate of the Furious, the last one, we finally got to the end of the series, my kids and I. We've been doing this for 6 weeks now. We get back from the movies. Myself and Jason Teasley will also be doing a video/audio podcast review of The Porky's Trilogy. Yes, Long Road to Ruin, The Porky's Trilogy.
Can't wait to see that slideshow.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you're just going to have to really hold back on that one.
Just the entire thing is going to be the gym teacher holding on to the guy's dick in the hole. because Jesse Storcher made me, we'll have a re-airing of our Pantera retrospective on the Metal Hammer of Doom from a million years ago. And then, to coincide with the release of Luca, Everyone Loves a Bad Guy re-airing of our show on Pixar villains. So that'll be fun. Next week, we've got reviews of the first volume of the Sweet Tooth book that the Netflix show is based on. Myself and Ronnie Adams will be talking that. We'll be doing a review of Luca. Both my kids will be on the Luca review. My son demanded it. He pointed it out in his contract. He's like, yeah, I have to do one cartoon review. And I'm like, you couldn't read a month ago.
What is this written in Crown?
Tuesday the 22nd, we're threatening to do yet another edition of the Four Kings of Boxing, this time on Marvin Hagler. We'll be allegedly reviewing WWE Hell in the Cell. And Evan Bevins, he's still really excited about the Mighty Duck show, and he's the only one. So we rescheduled that. It ended at the end of May. That's fine. We are going to review it on June 22nd, kind of doing a special favor for Evan because he was super excited about that and then was kind of sad when it all fell apart. Metal Hammer of Doom returns to its regularly scheduled time and theme.
Possibly programming.
we'll be reviewing the new Fear Factory, Aggression,
Control?
Continuum.
continue. C-O-N-T, aggression continued.
Yes. And then Ronnie Adams is coming back for the TV party on season one of Sweet Tooth from Netflix. All right. So that's it. That's all my podcast. When's the next trivia game? When is the next Unspoken Issues?
Yeah. So Tripped Up Trivia, Alexis Haina and myself are getting together this coming Saturday, and we have a league of people that are going to be on there. Actually, I know
you have a league of extraordinary gentlemen.
As a matter of fact, there may be one lady as well. So we're getting together. I've got my questions like 90% done. Knew all the answers when I first started, but I had to develop questions afterwards, and that took a long time for some reason. But anyway, that's recording on the 19th to coincide with the Black Widow movie. We're doing our Tripped Up Trivia on female superheroes. So kind of keep an eye out for that. That'll probably be recorded on the night. Well, it will be recorded on the 19th, probably air the 26th. Be ready. Syndicated source material will be dropping next Saturday, the 26th. Kind of keep an eye out for that. What if Wolverine killed your boy, Mark Radlich? What if Wolverine killed the Hulk? Check that out. That's a good one. And also, Dean Compton and myself are going to be recording Unspoken Issues this coming Sunday. I found a
Can you now that we're doing video, can we get video of Dean Compton snorting cocaine on the podcast?
He is excited. He may be amped up, and I love it. I love it. I love to.
He doesn't have to, like, we don't have to see the powder going up his nose. He's on, like, camera. Up but, like, can he do, like, one of these?
Snort. So, Dean Compton and myself, I found a Unspoken Issues poll we did. Oh, my goodness. It might have been close to a year ago that I completely forgot about. What if the Punisher had killed Spider-Man? So, we're supposed to record that come Sunday, and then it's going to be a twofer on Sunday where we record Icon number one as well. So that was another poll winner suggested by one of our friends over the Unspoken Issues podcast Facebook page, where we have all the polls at. Mark, we are way behind. We need to find a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen to vote for what if Silver Surfer possessed the Infinity Gauntlet, because it is completely getting trashed. Completely getting trashed by Thunder.
Why don't you do like federal politicians do and just rig the election?
Ooh, I could do that. I deleted the option. All of a sudden, the only comic book there in the poll is just the What If issue. But anyway, if you're a 90s comic book enthusiast, head over to that Facebook page. You can take part in the poll. You can tell us what we need to cover. That's going to happen. I think that's it. That's all I have on my agenda. At some point, I'm going off of vacation pretty soon. We'll see what the light looks like at the end of the tunnel for my essentiality. Hopefully that'll be getting brighter. Okay, I gave it 2 weeks. Maybe I get back and you're just like, no more overtime. You're free to do whatever you want, Jesse Starcher. I've always been free, but look, hey, you can't tell, but I just made money fingers on the podcast.
All right, folks, that's it. That's our review of Back to the Future Part 2. Court is now in recess. For Jesse Starcher, I'm Mark Radlich. It says so. Wrong hand. It says so. Damn it. I can't figure it. There it is. It says so on my screen. Yeah.
Wait, no, this way.
Be well. Yes, sir. Be well, be safe, and behave.
Gonna let